Ohio. Ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
It's lunchtime at Tim Hortons, and we're serving up a special deal just for you. Our new $5.99 lunch deal includes your choice of any lunch sandwich and a side of crunchy kettle chips. Because what's lunch without a little crunch? And the sandwich choice is all yours, like a ham and Swiss, Chipotle chicken wrap, BLT, and more, made to order just the way you like it. Tim Hortons' new lunch deal. Simple, delicious, and just $5.99. Now that's a good deal. Only at your neighborhood Tim's. U.S. only. Price and participation vary. Terms apply.
At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Tonight, police questing Kwadaso MP Dr. Kingsley Nyako and two EC staff over Ejisoba election bribery allegations.
This MP should be arrested by this time. Now, there is a giver of the bribe and the receiver of the bribe. How do you interrogate the receiver while the giver is still walking? You have killed the matter from the onslaught.
The IGP must expedite a very quick investigation into it and possibly come out with some level of prosecution. We need to protect the integrity of the Electoral Commission.
We have details of what the police has been able to do up until this time. Also tonight, majority in Parliament power pressure on the Speaker for the recall of the House to help government lay hands on a $150 million IDF loan to shore up the weakening Ghanaian city.
So that government can access this concessional facility to shore up our forex. We all know the situation with our city, and these are things that, if we are unable to speedily deal with, would affect our economy.
More, as they say, they expect the Speaker to comply with the Constitution and recall the House or let his deputies preside if he is unavailable.
Our rule says within 7 days, within 7 days. It cannot be after. But the good news again is that provide for the deputies to sit in the absence of Mr. Speaker.
Well, tonight, the MP at the center of the Ejisoba election bribery allegations questioned by police as investigations get underway into the incident. The Electoral Commission officials alleged to have received the bribe have also faced police investigators this afternoon. The Member of Parliament for Kwadaso, Dr. Kingsley Nyako, was caught on Joy News TV cameras giving an envelope to some officials of the Electoral Commission at the Church of Pentecost polling station at Famusua during the Ejisoba election. Already, Joy News understands the special prosecutor has also launched investigations into the matter. Surely, we'll hear from those pushing for prosecution. Right now, though, Joy News editor Fred Smith joins me in the studio with details of a statement issued by the police. Fred.
A statement coming out just in the last hour says Ghana Police Service has commenced investigations into the alleged electoral offences involving some temporary officers of the Electoral Commission and a member of parliament during the by-election at Ejusu in the Ashanti region. The persons involved, that's George Sasu, Regina Sewa and Dr. Kingsley Nyako have subsequently been invited by the police to assist the investigation and their statements duly taken. The police is working together with the Electoral Commission, it says, as the investigations continue.
So we now know the identities of the two Electoral Commission staff at the center of this.
Indeed. Mm. We do. George Sasu and Regina Sewa. Those are the temporary staff for the EC.
All right. Now, joining us now is Hobson Adoya, who represented the independent candidate Kwabena Aduomi in that by-election, who lost narrowly to the MPP candidate Kwabena Boateng. Also with us is the NDC's Deputy General Secretary Mustafa Gbande. Good evening to you, gentlemen. Let's start with you, Hobson. You called for the arrest of the MP. Now we're told by the police that he has been invited. Satisfied?
I'm very excited when I heard the news that he has been invited, because I was putting a statement together to the CID Director General to cause his arrest. So when I heard that Ashanti Regional Commander has invited him, I was so happy. Mm-hmm. And I know they are going to follow the due process and then maybe process him to court. Okay. So that it will be a deterrent to everybody. When you get to the election ground, you don't go and do such a thing there.
Mm. So your expectation is that he should be sent to court, he should be processed and sent to court?
I mean, it's against the electoral laws. You cannot just go to election day and then just pull a fat envelope and give it to election officials, telling us that it's a lunch. Have they requested for a lunch? Electoral Commission as a body has given every person who was working that day what to eat. So it's not your duty to go there and then give someone, even so, it's not even your constituency.
Okay. All right.
To claim that maybe they are working in my constituency, so I just want to take care of them. It's wrong. So I'm very happy that police have invited him.
Okay. So Mustafa Bande, I'm sure you're also happy with the development now.
Good evening to my parents. I am not happy.
Okay.
We don't call for the enforcement of the law so that we are happy.
Mm.
Or when a colleague finds himself at the wrong footing of the law, then we are excited. We do so because that is the only assurance of fundamental human rights. And this current government enjoys to abuse the rights of people, enjoys to abuse the power that the people of this country have given them. That is why some of us have decided that we will enforce and ensure that the law, which gives all of us a peace of mind, that law is working 24 hours. So at this point that the police have arrested him, we are waiting to see how the logic of the MPP makes sense, that the sitting member of parliament was giving food to the Electoral Commission officers. At this point, we would hands off the matter and allow the police to proceed in investigation. We will watch keenly to see the excuses that will be given. We will not allow any law to be abused further in this country. As we speak today, this evening, in the Bono region, a police commander have called a meeting and telling people that hello?
The line wasn't helping us, but I'm grateful to you for joining us here. Mustafa Gbande is the NDC's Deputy General Secretary. And earlier you heard Hobson Adoya, who is writer in charge of special duties with the Movement for Change, but he served as the agent at the polling station for the independent candidate, Kwabena Aduomi, in the Ejiso by-election. Well, tonight, the clock is ticking. Speaker of Parliament, Alban Bagbin, has 7 days to recall Parliament for an emergency sitting after more than 100 majority MPs triggered provisions of the Constitution understanding orders. The Majority Leader, Alexander Feomarkin, says their decision is in good faith. He revealed they had made several attempts to recall Parliament without a need to trigger an emergency sitting.
Whether or not the majority caucus is invoking its rights under the law in good faith? My answer is yes, we are. As far back as the 8th of April, I on behalf of colleagues, sent a memo to Mr. Speaker. In that memo, my humble prayer to Mr. Speaker was for him to exercise discretion under the powers given him in orders 53, 57, and 58. Unfortunately, my prayer was not successful. So we took the first major step. We are left with no option than to invoke our rights under Article 1123. For the avoidance of doubt, Article 1123 of the Constitution provides, notwithstanding any other provision of this article, 15% of members of Parliament may request a meeting of Parliament, and the Speaker shall, mandatory, within 7 days after the receipt of the request, summon Parliament. Now, this constitutional imperative has found space in our new rules book, the rules book of the House, that is the standing orders, Order 53. So Order 53 is also repeating, as it were, the provisions in the Constitution.
The Speaker of Parliament, Alban Bagbin, is currently outside the country, but the majority say that should not stop the House from reconvening because both his deputies are in the country and ready to preside over the emergency sitting. Now, just before that, this emergency sitting has become necessary due to some outstanding government business. The majority say cannot wait any longer, including the approval of ministers and approval of loans and tax waivers. Listen.
Our intended recall. Colleagues in the media may be aware of the fact that on the 20th of March, Mr. Speaker adjourned the House sine die. At the time the House was adjourned sine die, there were three items of urgent importance to government that had been advertised to be taken. They were advertised on the order paper of the day. And these were the items. One, the adoption of the 34th report of the Appointment Committee on His Excellency the President's nomination for appointment as ministers, regional ministers, and deputy ministers. Two, motion on additional financing agreement between Government of Ghana and the IDA for an amount of $150 million to finance the ongoing Greater Accra Resilient and Integrated Development Project, also known as the GARID. Three, request for tax exemption for selected beneficiaries under the 1D1F program. On the first item, you all know that Mr. President did some reshuffle and came out with some nominations. As you are well aware, the appointment committee sat on all of the nominees, interviewed them, engaged them, asked the relevant questions, and the report, as was tabled on the floor, was by consensus. So all we left to do is to take it through the motion of voting. On the issue of the GARID, that is the IDA, $150 million, the committee had done its work. In fact, we had taken the motion, and the Works and Housing Subcommittee, Committee of Parliament, had expressed certain views. And Mr. Speaker advised that the matter be taken back to committee and the leadership of the Works and Housing Committee be asked to join to express their views so that said views get incorporated. In fact, this was done, and all that is left is for this item to be taken so that government can access this concessional facility to shore up our forex. We all know the situation with our city, and these are things that, if we are unable to speedily deal with, would affect our economy.
So that's Alexander Afenyo-Makin, who is majority leader there. My colleague, who is our parliamentary affairs correspondent, Kweku Asante, joins me in studio. Kweku, you were there.
Mm.
We understand the speaker is not in town. Yes. What happens?
Well, the speaker still has 7 days to recall parliament, whether or not he's available in town or not. In fact, if you look at the wording of Article 1123 of the 1992 Constitution and Order 53 of the Standing Order, the speaker of parliament has no room to wriggle away from this. It's a mandatory shall. He shall reconvene parliament when he receives notice that 15% of MPs have signed on to a petition asking him to do so. And so the Speaker of Parliament will be mandated to do that. The majorities are already proposing solutions that the Speaker of Parliament believes he cannot be here. And the 7 days have already started counting from yesterday, today, up until next week, Friday. By next week, Friday, the Speaker of Parliament must have convened the House must have sat because of the 7-day window. They say the Speaker is not available. The deputies are available to sit. And in fact, Joe Wise was at this press conference. Mm. They say they are really ready to sit.
Our rule says within 7 days. Within 7 days. It cannot be after. But the good news again is that fortunately now, per our new rules, and 52 provide for the 12 provide for the deputies to sit in the absence of Mr. Speaker. And even if neither of them is available, we have the power to elect a member to preside. Now, if you go to 52, under Order 52, Parliament has provided for virtual sitting of Parliament. So we.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
You don't need members to be physically present in the jurisdiction. Technology has allowed us to join meetings by Zoom. So Mr. Speaker need not to be physically present in the jurisdiction to convene. We don't need to have all our 138 physically present in the chamber. Neither is NDC minority required to have all its 136, 37 members present in the chamber. Now technology has provided for Parliament to have a virtual sitting. So a situation where a minister is supposed to answer questions and is attending to some other ministerial responsibilities, he can join by Zoom and still take the questions. So we entertain no worries at all as to the ability of Mr. Speaker to uphold this constitutional provision.
So that's the majority leader, Alexander Afenyo-Makin, there. Now, what do the minority make of the reason behind this particular call, recalling of the House? We're joined by Murtala Mohammed, a former deputy trades minister, now a member of the Trades, Industry and Tourism Committee of Parliament. Murtala, I'm grateful to you for joining us here. Now, the minority have in the past raised issues with tax waivers. The majority say approval of same is the reason, one of the reasons why they want the House recalled. What's your reaction?
If I heard the majority leader indicating that technology has indeed provided opportunity
for Parliament to sit through virtual means. Even in Parliament, the internet connectivity in Parliament he knows that. Even in our offices, it is extremely difficult to even get the internet connectivity to the Parliament internet opportunity that is available. That is the first point. Two, the fact the Constitution says, the standing order says that the Speaker has no option than to reconvene Parliament. What it says is that the Speaker has 1 week to reconvene Parliament when notices of the request for the reconvening of Parliament is done through a letter written and by signatures of at least 15 members of Parliament. Now, within that 7 days, Speaker will not just ask us all to be there. There are some members of Parliament who are not even in this jurisdiction. There are some members of Parliament who are outside this country. And all those members ought to be there because they represent people. So the fact that the 7 days, once the 7 days elapsed and the Speaker says, I have given you people at least a minimum of 1 week to 2 weeks for us to reconvene. Before we rose, we were all aware that we shall be reconvening ending of May. Let's take 1 week. Within that 1 week, the Speaker is to tell us to come back to Parliament in 2 weeks' time. We'll be heading towards ending of May. So why this desperation?
Well, they argue that there are some government businesses that cannot wait till that time.
The list said about that insulting the people of this country, the better. They are talking about tax exemption. They want to go in for a loan of $150 million. A government that has indicated they are broke, they don't have money. They are going in for a loan of $150 million. Yet they are given tax exemption of over $500 million. Does it make sense to any rational human being? You want to go in for a loan of $150 million. For which reason you think that members of Parliament must abandon their activities and come back to Parliament at a time when members of Parliament are preparing towards the limited registration, which is not only necessary but essential to our democratic governance as a state. We want to get people to register. You want to go in for $150 million, and at the same time, you are given tax exemption because of 1B1F amounting to over $500 million. Does it make sense to you?
So, Honorable, if I get you right, you're saying that the cost of these tax waivers that they want to give amount to $500 million, that they are calling the House to consider.
$500 million. Yet, they are going in for $150 million. So listen to this. Parliament should come back to approve a loan of $150 million and at the same time give tax exemptions amounting to $500 million. Does it make sense? Does it make sense? In any case, who has done a proper impact assessment of 1B1F? And I have been calling for this. I have been asking people in this country, including you, the media, that has anybody done impact assessment of 1B1F? And I can conclude without any shred of doubt that the 1B1F, being a very good policy, recklessly and haphazardly implemented, is a complete failure. I say this because why? When you industrialize, the economy is supposed to grow, jobs are supposed to be created, unemployment is supposed to reduce. Yet with 1B1F, the economy is neither growing, unemployment is actually escalating. This government took unemployment from the NDC at just 6.8.
Okay.
Today.
All right.
What is unemployment? So it means that the 1B1F, which was intended to create more jobs, is not achieving the purpose for which it was indeed implemented in the first place.
Okay. Hold the line for me. Let me bring in the chairman of the Foreign Affairs Committee of Parliament, Andy Appiah-Kubi. He is a member of the majority side. Grateful to you for joining us. Yeah. Now, Parliament is expected to resume in the next, at the end of May, which probably in the next 3 weeks. Why can't those government businesses wait till then?
Well, as we all know, if Parliament is to reconvene at the end of May, that was a position taken by the Business Committee of the House. Now, there are also constitutional provisions that give benefit to members of Parliament to activate a recall, and for which reason the members of majority intend to invoke to recall parliament to come and sit to continue with government business. The two positions are different though, but they don't undermine each other, because the constitution allows for the recall in a situation where 15% of members of parliament think so, and it is a decision reserved for members of parliament. And much as people or some people may disagree with this present call, it is a provision provided by the constitution. For which reason, if any member or if such member want to invoke, they have every right to do so.
But all right, we all do understand that. But my question is, what is the urgency about these government businesses that you've enumerated, that they cannot wait till the time Parliament reconvenes?
Unfortunately, there is no caveat in support of that law that says that certain cases are emergency cases for which that provision can be invoked. It is a blanket provision that can be invoked at any time. So if the law provides for that opportunity and people want to take advantage of it, I will not force them, and I will not say that subject it to another condition that is outside the law. So,
I'm sure you agree with all the people who probably are opposed to this, that you cannot just activate that particular provision out in a vacuum. There should be a reason, mm-hmm. and you've given your reasoning, and that's why I'm asking that these reasons the majority side is giving. Why can't they wait till Parliament reconvenes by the end of May?
Indeed, there is no precondition for the invocation of that constitutional provision. And indeed, when the law does not provide for a situation before the invocation, there is a presumption of invocation at will. And therefore, I will not see it as somebody a condition precedent before the invocation. The Constitution did not provide any such condition precedent. So let us not fault whoever wants to apply the law correctly. And this idea of waiting for an emergency is beside the law, and therefore cannot be considered if somebody wants to trigger that provision. So much as a group of members who number up to the 15% agree and decide to invoke that constitutional provision, there cannot be any ifs and buts, because the constitution did not anticipate a condition precedent before invoking that provision. So let's move on from there. Members of parliament, they have so lawfully invoked a constitutional provision, and they have a right to so do. They have done that. So let's follow the constitutional journey. If they invoke it, the constitution.
Honorable, I understand the constitution gives them that right to, Mr. Abekubi, the constitution gives them the right to say, to activate that provision. But you have given some reasons why you want Speaker to recall the House even before the agreed upon time for recall. And I'm asking that all of these, the approval of the ministers, of loans and waivers, why can't they wait till then? But I'm not really getting that. Uh-huh.
Unfortunately, the law did not give any precondition for the invocation. The law did not say that. Give a proven reason why you have to recall.
Okay.
It is a blanket right given to members of parliament to recall if they find it necessary to so do.
Okay. I'm grateful to you. I'm grateful to you. Andy Apiakobi is MP for Asante Achim North, and he joined us here as well as Ibrahim Mutala Mohammed. But it's time for me to bring in Professor Lord Mensah, who's Associate Professor in Finance at the University of Ghana Business School. Grateful to you, sir, for joining. Now, if you look at, I mean, the reasoning, they're saying that they want Parliament reconvened so that they could approve a $150 million loan, enough to show up the weakening Ghana city. But I'm asking you, you understand how all of these things do work. Must attracting loans be the focus of those managing the economy at this point in time?
Yeah, I mean, critically, if you look at the timing, you would say that, yes, of course. I mean, a country that is debt-ridden is not supposed to, you know, borrow. But then in the end, we may have to look at the type of loan that they're going in for. Because at the point in time where you are hired up with debt and you have interest rates, you know, also going up, I mean, it won't be ideal to borrow. But if the loan is a type of concessionary loan that will be targeting certain sectors of the economy to spur up, I mean, growth and then possibly create employment, then obviously it's something that, you know, will be worth considering. But, you know, with the history of Ghana, normally when we borrow for a purpose, we don't, you know, I mean, put the money in that, you know, I mean, project that we went in for the money. So effectively, we tend to lose the money, I mean, that we borrowed for. So anytime someone, you know, the country is going to borrow, we get worried because history has given us, I mean, enough evidence that, I mean, when we borrow for a purpose, we don't tend to use the funds for that purpose. But, I mean, even though our debt has gone up, if we are going to borrow for a purpose, go into critical development projects, which, you know, will improve on our infrastructure, and then also spur up economic growth, you know, by providing jobs here and there, it's not a bad thing to do. So it depends on the type of loan. I mean, for now, if you're going for any loan that will be of a short term, it will not be advisable. Probably we may have to look at a type of loan that is...
We understand this is a concessionary loan. And
if it's a concessionary loan, what interest rate are we paying? And borrowing for a project does not necessarily mean that it's going to show up your, I mean, balance of payment. Your foreign currency needs, as we speak now, in this country, it's more than the $150 million that Parliament is, seeking to approve. So, from what I say, I think yes, of course, it could be a project. But if you know we have to borrow, I would say that specifically, if the amount is going into project within a certain agency, I'll prefer the agency to borrow on its balance sheet so that the agency will be responsible for the debt rather than allowing, you know, Ghana to go and borrow. And in the end, sometimes we find it difficult to know what exactly we've used the money for.
But how do you juxtapose that to, you know, our attempt to give, I mean, like Honorable Mutala said, a total of $500 million in tax waivers? If we're looking for
$150 million. That figure has not been confirmed. We may have to look at the kind of businesses that these waivers are going to be given to. Are they, I mean, businesses that if you allow a tax waiver, which definitely is an economic cost because the tax builds up into our revenue, in the end, if we are not able to capture it at a port and we allow it to come into the country, will they be able to create that kind of business multiplier effect, which at the end of the day, the economy will benefit from it more than, you know, allowing the waiver? Because if you allow the waiver and it turns out that, you know, it's a business that will end up in the economy, that will not build up into anything, then the waiver is not necessary.
Professor Lord Mensah, I'm grateful to you for joining us. He is Associate Professor in Finance at the University of Ghana Business School. And that's how we wrap up Top Story. Up next is Ghana Connect with Kweku Asante. There's more on myjoyonline.com. Good evening.
You.
Yes, you.
You listening to me on the radio?
I know exactly what you need.
And I go sort you out.
But first, a quick introduction.
Maybe the connection man.
I'll make things happen.
Whether it be business,
fashion, or the latest trend in town.
I go connect you.
I know when people connect.
Big things they happen.
I am the plug to your plug.
Anything you want.
That's sort you.
I go show you where options
they. Line them up for you.
You want download or you want stream?
Link up.
I got you.
I conquer everywhere.
From Circle to Kijitia.
If Yakuma to Navrongo.
Yosu to Kita.
Techima to Kumbungu.
I'll be the link between you and the next big opportunity.
It be me where I go connect you, make it happen.
Oh,
you won't know my name. I am Telecel.
Switch to Telecel for the best value voice and data services and connect to the things that matter. Connecting dreams. Connecting goals. Connecting passions.
Telecel. Connecting energies.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Ghana Connect. This week, the Ejisu by-election was on our hands. And it came with the usual controversy that surrounds election in the country. Allegations of vote buying. And in fact, this has become such a topical situation because a sitting member of parliament on the New Patriotic Party side, an MP for Kwadaso, Professor Kingsley Nyako, was seen giving an envelope to two electoral commission officials on the grounds of voting. We have now been told that the content of the envelope was money that the prof was giving to the two officials for lunch. Of course, we have also now established that Ghanaian laws frown on that. And just a while